Egypt reopens its stock market.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson with the Morning Open, a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, panic delayed. Egyptian stocks dropped 10% after a two-month halt in trading. But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are down on Wall Street. The Dow down 21 points at 11,996. The Nasdaq down 0.6%. The S&P 500 down 0.5%. General Mills said today its profit jumped last quarter despite the increasing cost of the ingredients used to make its cereals, soups, and ice creams. Overseas sales helped offset a slight decline here in the U.S. Now let's get to the Egyptian stock market. It reopened today for the first time since the uprising there. Stocks plunged almost 10% and trading was halted again. As we continue our coverage of the economic consequences of the changes that are going on in the Middle East, let's go live to Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
So does it really help to keep a stock market closed for 2 months if when you open it, it's just going to drop like this?
No, I don't think so. The standard argument is that you provide a pause if markets aren't assimilating information quickly and efficiently. You give people a time to absorb new information,
right.
And with that information, people behave more rationally.
Well, do you think that now they have the information? Are things more certain now in Egypt than they were a couple months ago?
I would argue that they are not. We have some certainty on the political situation. Mubarak, his regime is over. And some form of representative democracy is going to be taking shape, but economic uncertainties are still enormous. The military was a major force in the Egyptian economy, and there are signs that maybe they're even rolling back rather than advancing reforms. And certainly, if we look around the neighborhood, tumult is everywhere in the Middle East. Its neighbor, Libya, and not so far away, Yemen, are arguably in some form of revolution. So I would say uncertainty is not diminished overall.
Richard DeKayser, economist at the Parthenon Group, thanks so much as always.
My pleasure.
Well, oil is back up around $105 a barrel today. I say dollars because that's the currency that's used to buy and sell oil around the world. For now, anyway. We continue our Economy 4.0 series on the new global economy now with this report from special correspondent David Brancaccio.
The dollar at numero uno for the last 70 years or so brings special benefits our way. Foreigners like to save in dollars, demand that keeps our interest rates down. Converting currency is expensive, and American companies have the advantage of not switching if an international deal is done in dollars. But that's changing.
At the end of last year, there were 70,000 Chinese companies that were doing their cross-border trade using China's own currency, which meant that the foreign company on the other side of the deal was accepting Chinese currency in payment.
Barry Eichengreen, an economist at UC Berkeley, has a new book about the dollar called Exorbitant Privilege. That's the phrase coined years ago by a French official annoyed by the dollar advantage. But the current rise in deals done in Chinese renminbi is just one sign its star is rising quickly.
So you may have heard that the Bank of China started offering Chinese currency deposits to Americans.
Well, there it is on Madison Avenue, the Bank of China USA. All I need is a couple of forms of ID, a social security card, and at least $500, and I can become an international currency speculator.
If you want to take a bet that the Chinese currency is going to gain value relative to the dollar over time, you can do that now.
And deposits in the new Bank of China New York account are FDIC insured. U.S.-based EverBank also has a renminbi account, but with a minimum deposit of $10,000. EverBank's Chuck Butler.
The Chinese said, okay, we're going to start allowing the currency to appreciate again, and it's moved since last June about 4% higher.
The accounts don't pay interest, so they only make money if the renminbi is ascendant. But Eichengreen does not believe the dollar is washed up. History shows the world can live with several of these coveted reserve currencies. His prediction, by 2020, the euro, the renminbi, and the dollar could all share the top spot. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
And there's more at David's Economy 4.0 blog at marketplace.org.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation, supporting customer choice and clean, efficient energy sources and technologies, working with customers nationwide to create a sustainable energy future. Constellation.com. By Progressive Insurance, with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at Progressive.com. And by Mini, with 37 miles per gallon and 3 years or 36,000 miles of boot-to-bonnet maintenance. MiniUSA.com/info.
1 week is all it took for a Canadian hacker to figure out and publish a way to avoid paying for the New York Times Online. The Times has started charging frequent web users. Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports now on whether Times readers are really ready to pay up.
If you know how to install an extension on your internet browser, if those words even make sense to you, then you're nerdy enough to hack into the New York Times paywall and read articles online for free.
It's less about how nerdy a user is and more about how exposed he or she is to the work of other nerds.
This is Josh Benton, director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard. So what's the New York Times banking on, that its readers are just not smart enough or too underinformed? That's not...
Not very Timesian.
No.
I think... The number of people who are going to decide, I want to create some sort of hack in my browser, can be pretty small. It's not going to be zero, but I think most people will make a decision to either pay up or just go to another website.
Because, and this is the guilt trip model that you, public radio listener, know well, people like to get their news for free, but they can sometimes be shamed into paying for it.
Shame or, you know, paying money for services because they value the content that the Times produces.
Could be the slogan for a New York Times pledge drive. I'm Gregory Warner, bringing you this story at no extra charge on Marketplace.
And finally, to Beverly Hills, there was a press conference yesterday to oppose the construction of a new 42,000-square-foot mega mansion there. Well, actually, if you include the villa, guest house, and staff quarters, it's 85,000 square feet and would dwarf L.A.'s famous Griffith Observatory, though someone associated with the project told the L.A. Times it's just a normal Mediterranean-style house. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
All right, so here's an idea. What if we made toxic chemicals non-toxic from the start so we don't have to deal with their after effects later on?
And I said, rather than looking at how we design molecules that can treat or hopefully cure cancer, I want to try and come up with a way that all of the chemicals that we're surrounded by can't cause cancer and can't cause other kinds of toxicity.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the EPA's new green campaign, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.